Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer and the NBA over at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, interact with us. We'd love to hear from you. Send us all your questions. We're doing mailbag tomorrow. So definitely send those voicemails in, those text messages. We want a full boat of questions for tomorrow's episode. You guys have been really great with the mailbag segments, and I feel like every week our mailbag episodes are usually the best, and they keep getting better. So we appreciate anybody and everybody who's been sending us questions or voicemails. They've been really good over the last few weeks. So you can send us there or over on social media at Locked On Bulls. So once again, 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. Matt, how are you? End officially the end of the Toronto Raptors, and a lot of conversations going on in the Twitter world, but also we had the early tip-off of the 76ers Celtics game last night. Things got chippy as well. Are you enjoying the playoffs? And we've got some NBA news as well with a coach being fired in Detroit. But how are you doing?
What's up, Jordan? Bulls Nation. What's going on, everybody? Glad to see the Sixers pick up a win and stave off elimination last night. I mean, it was really crazy to think that the Sixers were even down 3-0 in that series. Games 2 and 3 were really, I mean, right there for the taking, and the Sixers with some coaching blunders and some late game blunders because they're a young, inexperienced playoff team coughing things up. So they were in desperation mode. All of a sudden, their backs were against the wall, but you liked the performance that you saw from them. And I mean, how exciting was TJ McConnell getting his first playoff start? And looked like it was a pretty smart move from Brett Brown, who everybody's saying has been vastly outcoached in this series by Brad Stevens so far. But McConnell was a spark plug that they needed. He went 9-12, finished with 19 points. He was a plus 18 for the Sixers. Simmons had finally a respectable game with 19 points and 13 rebounds. The highlight for me was tiny little Terry Rozier trying to pick a fight with Joel Embiid, because what on earth is he thinking? I was so disappointed that the fight didn't escalate further than it did, but also probably it's a good thing that it didn't, because Embiid would have Bobby Portis one punch knocked the crap out of Terry Rozier. So hopefully we get some more of that bad blood boiling up in game 5 as the Sixers try and stave off elimination on the road and bring it back to Philly for game 6. But it's been a very entertaining series so far. I'm glad that Philly managed to get a W.
Yeah, I know Joel Embiid looks scary as hell and is at least a foot taller than Terry Rozier, if not more. The man, you don't fuck around with Terry Rozier. I was watching a documentary series, I think. It was like a short series, either on ESPN or Fox, and it was following Terry Rozier and just sort of his come up, and he's battled through a lot of adversity like I think a lot of NBA players have. and talked about the struggle when he was younger, just kind of acting out. And his father went to prison, and they actually had a hit on his house. Like, his grandma and his mother lived in this house, and apparently there was gang-related activity, and they had to move from where they lived because they found out that there was a possibility that their house could get shot up or blown up. So they moved, and part of this conversation was, like, Terry Rozier got his mom and his grandma's name tattooed on him. He said he was kind of one of these guys that was just always loved to create trouble and didn't really listen, but he said that was kind of a turning point in his life, especially so young. But then he went on to play at a military academy in high school, and then in college went to Louisville, and obviously the rest is history. But I'm telling you, man, Joel Embiid, better be careful, because Terry Rozier might be a foot shorter than you, but the dude is a pit bull.
You can't be serious.
I mean, he'll knock him.
Joel Embiid would step on him, and the fight would be over in a matter of seconds.
I'm just telling you, Terry Rozier's a little pit bull, so I would not... I guess if it was anybody but Joel Embiid, I'd be like, all right, that dude should probably not mess around with him.
We also had Embiid chirping at Marcus Morris in that game, and then Morris giving him the old 3-0 with his fingers. So, like, yeah, talk all the trash you want, Embiid. We're up 3-0 on you. That was another classic moment of these playoffs thus far.
Did you see Joel Embiid's shirt that said history will be retweeted last night?
Yeah, I did. I saw that.
That's great.
I don't know if there's somebody in this league whose character I enjoy more than Joel Embiid right now. That guy is just nonstop entertaining.
I don't see how anybody could possibly hate that guy. He talks a lot of shit, but it's in a way that is like so, it's just so funny, and it's sort of twisted. Like, it always sounds like it's a joke, you know, coming out from him when he's talking crap, and he just finds a way to twist it and make it funny. I think there's a lot of NBA fans that can agree out there. But I've got another comment real quick, because you brought up TJ McConnell. So if Fred Hoiberg is watching this game right now, or last night was watching this game, I would imagine he's like, okay, let me get all of the film from TJ McConnell over the last 6 weeks. I'm going to lock Ryan Arcidiacono in a room and not let him come out until he can completely transform his game into what TJ McConnell can do. Because TJ McConnell's like that guy that's the 110, 120% effort guy. And usually that guy sticks around at big time colleges and college basketball in the NCAA. But usually that doesn't really translate to the NBA. But TJ McConnell is proving everybody wrong. And I enjoyed his press conference post game too, where he basically said, you know, you guys can keep discrediting me and saying that I don't belong in this league, but I'm just going to keep going out there and doing what I do and what makes me great. So I had big props for TJ McConnell, but any idea if Fred Hoiberg's going to come up with this idea of just sticking Ryan Arcidiacono and maybe every other point guard that he has that wants to be sort of this 110%, 120% effort guy, stick him in the film room and don't let him come out until he can completely retransform himself into TJ McConnell 2.0.
Yeah, well, I mean, what McConnell did last night was undoubtedly impressive. As far as Hoiberg trying to get Arcidiacono to mirror his game and his, I mean, come on. Like, I might be writing a few words on Arcidiacono later today as we're doing these season recap player evaluations, but I don't know about you, Jordan. I do not have high hopes for Arcidiacono making this Bulls roster. They do have him on that two-way contract for another year, but if you're trying to draw comparisons, McConnell just played big time in a playoff game, and most of the time when I saw Arcidiacono on the court for the Bulls this season as opposed to the Windy City Bulls, I was like, yeah, that guy can't play. So I think the comparison ends as soon as it begins.
But, yes.
Well, I mean, we'll Absolutely. See. I mean, we'll see if Brett Brown decides to keep McConnell in that starting lineup for game five. I would be surprised if he didn't, because it certainly seemed to work out, and he gave the Celtics all kinds of trouble. And meanwhile, I mean, like, Covington had a pretty terrible game and was a total non-factor. And there was a moment mid-fourth quarter, it was like right around the 7 or 6 minute mark, where McConnell came out and Covington came back in. You're thinking, like, is he actually going to take McConnell out? Like, he's playing really well. And it was like, no, he's just giving him like a quick breather. And Covington was in there for all of 45 seconds. And then McConnell came back in and finished the game. It was awesome. It was another fun story about... I feel like these playoffs have been filled with side stories and small character people who are making big moments happen that are not the top five, top 10 stars that you expect to have big games from. Because you're still getting that from Harden, and you're still getting that from LeBron.
Absolutely.
But McConnell was the latest in a long string of, who is this guy making big plays in the NBA playoffs? It's great. It's great when the playoffs have that extra element.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about this, like, obviously, huge basketball heads, people who watch the NBA night in and night out know who TJ McConnell is if you're ever on Twitter, whatever. But I think for the average basketball fan, it's funny because some of these guys that have been breaking out, such as Terry Rozier even, you throw Terry Rozier's name in there. A bunch of other guys, you can look around.
Joe Ingles.
There you go. I know Donovan Mitchell's been sort of the star of these playoffs so far, but you toss out a lot of these young guys or some of these role players that are really having a huge impact on their teams, and it's pretty cool to watch, honestly. And just to touch on really quick, just to go back to Ryan Arcidiacono for a second, from what I was listening to and what I was reading, it sounds like the Bulls and their coaching staff are intrigued enough with Ryan Arcidiacono that they'll keep him around again on that two-way contract. Like you said, I don't see him, and this might be a little bit different in terms of Antonio Blakeney's situation, but I don't see any other team in the NBA right now offering him a full-time contract. So if he stays on that two-way deal, which he gets 2 years, that's what it was, he'll be able to play again mixed in with the Windy City Bulls and the Chicago Bulls. But I think he did just enough in terms of an effort guy out there and a competency level out there for the Bulls and their coaching staff to at least give the guy another look for next year. That's not saying that he's going to make any type of impact or be playing any majority minutes or anything, but they've got him on that two-way deal and they'll see what happens. So, hey, it could happen. I mean, I don't know. I'm not putting all my chips into it, and I'm not telling you to do that as well. But, hey, he's on a two-way contract for the next year, and you can't really count out the 120% type of players, especially when you see things like TJ McConnell and what he's doing for the 76ers.
Fair enough. All right, Jordan, real quick before we take a break, doubleheader on out in the Western Conference tonight. Any chance the Utah or the Pelicans push their series to a game six with a win on the road tonight?
I don't see it. I think if I had to pick, I would probably say the Pelicans are probably going to give the Golden State Warriors, again, a really good game. They've been tough throughout this series, and I know we've talked about the Jazz, and the Jazz pulled off a win against the Rockets, but I don't see it. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be intrigued by the Warriors-Pelicans game. Like I had said, I think the pace of that series has been absolutely incredible. It's just back and forth, back and forth. There's really been no slow the game down and run it in terms of a half-court offense. Neither of those teams do that, so that's been a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch. The Jazz have been a really nice story, but man, it's almost impossible to stop James Harden when he's doing things like he has it in this entire playoffs. And then you add in a guy who I think has been one of the hottest players in this playoffs in Clint Capella. I mean, it's awful tough, but yeah, I got to give.
For all of the hype around Rudy Gobert since he came back, Capella was dominating Gobert in their game.
I love that guy, so. Man. If LeBron decides out of some crazy idea that he's going to go to Houston this summer and Clint Capella, and they can't pay Clint Capella, and then he's on the market, I mean, I would be hard pressed to say, hey, at least bring this guy in and let's find out what the ballpark in terms of money is. I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we got a question about it, but man, the more and more I watch Clint Capella, the more I fall in love with this game.
Yeah, that's a good young player. I highly doubt the Bulls are anywhere near the top of his list if the Rockets do let him walk. But hey, dare to dream, baby.
That's true. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we want to talk about the breaking news in the NBA that happened yesterday. We'll check in with our friends over at Locked On Pistons as well. Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons decided to part ways yesterday. So we want to kind of dive into that. And then the back half of our segments, we're going to talk about David Nwaba and Antonio Blakeney in our Bulls player evaluations as we continue to do that. Stay with us right here on Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hey, this is Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons. But after a month, it finally happened. Stan Van Gundy was fired Monday by the Pistons as coach and president of basketball operations with a rather strange press release by the team where Tom Gores, the owner, and Stan Van Gundy, he said Tom Gores that Stan wanted to return. Quote, Stan is a competitor and he wanted to finish the job, Gores said. Not quite sure exactly why Gores needs to be pointing that out. I don't know if that's a dig at Stan Van Gundy or if that's trying to make him look better. It was a strange way of putting that. After 4 years, with 1 year remaining on his contract, Stan will not be coming back. Van Gundy's 4 years featured a rapid ascent to the playoffs in year two after taking over a franchise stuck in the mud, but the last two were obviously disappointing seasons, hindered by reckless free agent misses and draft night head scratchers, most notably taking Luke Kennard over Donovan Mitchell last summer as Mitchell began to, it looks like a starring career that he's going to have with the Utah Jazz, and that one spelled the end of the Stan Van Gundy era. We may never know what happened in the days of California meetings between Gores and Van Gundy that dragged out recently, and why did they drag out so long is the biggest question probably on Pistons fans right now on the minds. But Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported that last week that Gores wanted Stan Van Gundy to stay on as coach but retool the front office structure. But they weren't able to reach that agreement, nor were they able to get into any extension that Stan Van Gundy was likely pining for with only 1 year left in his deal. So Dan will collect $7 million and probably have his pick of television jobs as he's a engaging and compelling personality in front of the microphones. All told, it'll probably be better for him than a lame duck year under a new boss that didn't hire him. So the Pistons joined the coach and executive searches nearly a month after their season ended. Again, why did that take so long? Names like Steve Clifford, Mike Budenholzer, or former Piston Jerry Stackhouse figure to be tossed around in terms of coaching candidates, although this job certainly ranks below division rival Milwaukee in the pecking order of openings. And you can draw your own conclusions as fans and coaches out there about where the Pistons fall in terms of some of these other ones, like the Charlottes or maybe the rebuilding teams such as Atlanta that still have openings as well. Woj of ESPN also reported that former Arne Tellen client Brent Barry could be involved in the new front office as well. Former Pistons star Chauncey Billups was also attached to the team's front office in a report from Mark Stein of the New York Times earlier this year in January as potentially part of the revamped front office for the Pistons and his former team. The team will move forward with a potentially awkward and injury-prone core of Blake Griffin, Reggie Jackson, and Andre Drummond with little salary cap flexibility and almost assuredly no first-round pick next month. But if there's one thing we can guess about Gores, a Malibu resident who has gravitated more to his glitzy life in California than his Michigan background, it's that he's probably going to want to make a splash. Based on his bidding of Van Gundy away from the Warriors 4 years ago and his at least approval of the Griffin trade this year, he'll be hoping to make that big splash and get the Pistons out there and in a winning position, and especially in the newspapers and on Twitter right away, and hopefully back in the playoffs as quickly as this year. And we will see how that works out for the Detroit Pistons down the road, again, who have fired Stan Van Gundy as coach and president of basketball operations. This is Matt Shook for Locked On Pistons. Thanks for listening.
That was the voice of Matt Shook from Locked On Pistons. Thanks again to him for sending that out to our network. A little touch on the breaking news here in the NBA. Outside of the NBA playoffs, as Stan Van Gundy is out in Detroit. Matt, how did you take this news yesterday? And I was laughing super hard because, I don't know, I know there's a lot of our listeners who listen to Pardon My Take. Blake Griffin was on their show on Monday, and they did their recording on Sunday. So this happened before Stan Van Gundy was out. And Blake Griffin had high praise for Stan Van Gundy as a coach, and they kept asking him questions about him. And in hindsight, with that episode being released, him being out now kind of made that sort of weird and funny. But what do you think of this news, and what are the Pistons going to do going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I guess it took me by surprise just because as much as the Pistons had struggled, I know that, you know, Stan Van is a guy with a pretty decent NBA resume and he's respected around the league. And I didn't necessarily think that with the big move that they made this past trade deadline to get Blake, that, you know, that was him being the coach slash president of basketball operations, that was a big part, that was in large part orchestrated by Stan Van, so that okay, he makes the trade to get the new star, the new franchise player to Detroit, and then you fire him. And then I heard after that that it was not necessarily entirely Stan Van's call to execute that Blake trade, even though he is one of these new hybrid coach slash executives, and that it was not necessarily his idea, and it was not 100% his call to execute that Blake trade. So that maybe this Pistons team was trying to restructure, and we're not really thinking about doing so with Stan Van staying on board. That being said, I mean, Bill Simmons had a fantastic tweet when the news broke yesterday. I'm not a huge Simmons guy. I think for the most part, he's just washed up and annoying. But he does know a whole hell of a lot about the NBA, so I still follow him. But this is what Simmons tweeted out after that news broke. I just thought it was so funny. Dear Detroit, sorry about taking Kennard over Mitchell, overpaying Reggie Jackson, taking Stanley Johnson over getting four firsts from Boston, ruining your salary cap with the Blake trade, and leaving you without a 2018 first-round pick. I'm going to go do TV. I'll see you later. Thanks, SVG. It's like,
oh, my God. Talk about a roast.
Absolutely savage. But, I mean, it's kind of like you feel bad. I feel bad for my buddy Matt Shook, and I feel bad for Pistons fans because I'm just like, where is this franchise going? I don't have a whole lot of faith in Blake Griffin turning that franchise around. He's an injury-riddled veteran who's getting older and older. I think his best years are behind him. Bulls fans can be skeptical about this rebuild, but the Pistons, as of right now, are in a worse place than the Bulls because they don't have an abundance of draft picks. They don't have any draft picks coming in, and they're stuck in the middle. And that's where the Bulls were a year ago, and they decided to make a move. So, I mean, I don't know. I think the other highlight here for me is that this is another piece of evidence in the whole new NBA's head coach slash executive slash player, you know, president of basketball operations. Those are two tough jobs, and to combine them into one guy, I think it's too much, and it backfired with Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons. I don't think Doc handled it very well with the Clippers. We'll see how Tibbs handles it in Minnesota. There's certainly already critiques of how he's done in that two-headed monster of a job. I don't think that those two jobs are meant to go smushed together into one job. It's a lot of work.
I'm with you too. I don't think that you can really set yourself up for success if you have to run both of those jobs. Like, you think about it, other NBA teams around the league, like, those are full-time jobs. Just being a head coach or just being the GM of a team, it's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of stuff, a lot of shit on your plate. And I think you're right, too. And that tweet is hilarious. Like, some of the missteps that this Pistons team has made over the years, I don't think they're in that bad of a position in terms of, you know, if you look at their situation, and obviously it's really shitty, but you can make this situation work. And I think I disagree with you when you say that Blake Griffin's best years are behind him. I think for one, he's got to stay healthy, which is a huge thing.
When's the last time he did that?
Exactly. I mean, the last time he played almost a full season or over 60 games was 3 years ago when he was 25. The last time he was an All-Star with the Clippers, he played in 67 games. Before that, he played back-to-back seasons where he was in 80 games apiece. That's something that I think it's weird, though, and it's kind of like you can't really blame Blake Griffin either. You think about some of the injuries that he got with the Clippers, they were just kind of like freak weird accidents that happened that were really not his fault. So I'd like to see him stay healthy. And another thing, too, is I checked out Andre Drummond's Snapchat, and he had some interesting things where it was like, I'm not going anywhere, all love for Detroit. So I'm wondering if he was kind of fed up with Stan Van Gundy and the way he was running that team. Same thing with Reggie Jackson and guys like Stanley Johnson, who were plugged in the back part of that bench and not really given an opportunity. And there's a couple other guys on that roster, too, as well, that you could talk about. But yeah, I mean, I know the fans liked Stan Van Gundy, and he's kind of an out there type of guy. But like you said, the job of having to task both the NBA coaching job and a GM, I think, is difficult, and it just kind of sets you up for success. So I think going forward, if we're talking about open positions for NBA teams and the way that they're going to structure this, do you see any other NBA teams maybe in the future deciding that this is a good idea when they bring in a coach to make them not only the GM but the head coach as well. Like you had said, a lot of these teams that have decided to do this with coaches, it's not really working out for them. So I feel like teams are going to start to look at this and say, yeah, you know what, this is probably not a good idea anymore. Let's just hire a coach and hire a GM and let them do their separate jobs, and hopefully they have some chemistry and some communication and the lines can be open. But I think it's a tall task to ask somebody to run both of those positions, both of those jobs, day in and day out.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if the more we see that combination of coach and executive, you know, done by one person failing at the NBA level, that we would stop seeing it, because teams who would be considering it would say, well, clearly it doesn't work very well. It hasn't worked for the teams that have tried it. But it makes me think of that. I don't know if we got any Arrested Development fans out there, but when Tobias and Lindsay are talking about, you know, trying to keep their marriage going by having an open relationship, and Tobias has this great line where he's like, and all these silly delusional people think, well, it doesn't usually work for most everybody, but it might work for us. And then basically turns that right on its head and says, so, you know, it probably won't work. But it might work for us. So unless some NBA team out there is dumb enough to think that based on the evidence, well, maybe they just didn't do it right because they didn't get the right guy, they didn't go about it the right way, let's try that whole head coach / president of basketball operations thing and see how it goes. To me, look at the evidence, and I guess there's only so many samples that you can pull from right now. But it doesn't seem to be working very well.
I would agree. So, but for that Pistons team overall, like I said, I think you bring in the right coach to figure out how they can manage two bigs, sort of the way the Clippers had to do it with DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin. I think Andre Drummond's a phenomenal player, and I think you pair that with Blake Griffin. And Blake Griffin talked extensively, too, and not only the Part of My Take interview, but other interviews he's done already, talking about the way he wants to transform his game. He talked about how his last season alone, he shot more threes and made more threes in that season alone than he had in his entire career combined. He talked a little bit about how he wants to reduce the amount of threes that he was taking. He said he thinks 5 to 6 a game are way too many. He wants to be down to 3 or 4. But he said he also wants to develop it as part of his game and grow as a player. And I mean, man, he still can. He's only 28 years old. So we'll see what that Pistons team decides to do. But yeah, I think the biggest glaring mistake here was taking Luke Kennard over Donovan Mitchell. We talk about the missteps the Bulls have made in terms of the draft recently and some of the trades that they have made, but that one looks really, really bad right now.
Yeah, and you wonder who the Pistons are going to turn to. You know, a lot of similar names that are going around that have still not been hired. I just saw, you know, as we started to record earlier today, the Hornets seem to have found their guy. This was a tweet from Woj at around noon on Tuesday. Spurs assistant James Borrego is finalizing a deal to become the next head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. So I know, and Matt Shook, when he was talking, mentioned him and a few other names, including Jerry Stackhouse. We'll see, you know, Mike Budenholzer. Fizdale's already committed to the Knicks. He got introduced today. Becky Hammond, who's interviewing with Milwaukee, might also, you know, get some interest from Detroit now. But I think Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons is also right in saying that right now it seems like the Milwaukee job, as if you're talking about middling teams in the NBA, is more enticing than the Detroit job. Like, who would you rather coach and build a team around, Antetokounmpo or Blake Griffin? To me, it's the Greek Freak, and it's not close.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. So I think maybe they'll wait to see what Milwaukee decides to do or who decides to go to Milwaukee. You brought up that name, though, real quick, Jerry Stackhouse. I think that makes like all the sense in the world, and that's just coming from somebody outside of Detroit. But think about it. Jerry Stackhouse played there for a while. He's done a phenomenal job coaching in the G League for the Toronto Raptors team in the G League. He went to the finals, I think, back-to-back years and won the championship either last year or 2 years ago. He's been one of those sort of out-of-the-box coaches, outside sort of crazy idea in terms of coaching spots in the NBA. And I know that there's this pecking order that NBA personalities feel like has to go through in order to get the job and who's in line and who's not. I'd be very surprised if the Pistons didn't at least give Jerry Stackhouse an interview. He'd be a really cool coach, and I think, you know, working with those two bigs and Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, you've got a smart coach who's been in the NBA for a long time and is building and working his way up through the G League. Like, I've got to imagine that that's got to be at least one of the favorites for that job. It'd be really cool to see him get a job too. I think the success that he's had in the G League, on top of, like I said, you know, being a big man playing in the NBA for a long time, having the connection with Detroit, and then you've got two of the best big men in the NBA too on your team for a while in Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin. So I feel like if you're connecting the dots a little bit, that makes the most sense.
And people were trying to connect the dots, saying that Stackhouse was a prime candidate for the Hornets job because of the UNC connection. MJ, UNC guy, Stackhouse, UNC guy. So that didn't happen. They went with the Spurs assistant coach. So if, you know, if you're starting to eliminate, you know, options and opportunities, there is that connection with Stackhouse having played there. So I think right now, and really, as I said, that Milwaukee job is probably more desirable than the Detroit job. I think the Detroit job is probably more desirable than the Charlotte job at this point.
Anything's more desirable than the Charlotte job.
Because the Hornets are a mess. Like, Stackhouse might like his, you know, his UNC buddy MJ, but that Charlotte team is a mess. So, yeah, I would love to see Stackhouse get his first opportunity to be a head coach at the NBA level.
That Hornets team is utter trash.
Or as Jimmy Butler would say about the Raptors, doo-doo.
Jimmy, what do you think of the Raptors so far?
Doo-doo.
Oh, man. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to look at the coaching search here as we kind of continue through the playoffs and more interviews happen. The Bucks job obviously still being open, and now with the Pistons job opening up as well. I don't think that there's going to be any other NBA jobs open this summer, but maybe we just wait and see. I would be hard-pressed. I know there's been rumors and some people wanted to write articles about it, but I would be really hard-pressed to say that Dwayne Casey would be out of a job in Toronto. Am I crazy for thinking that?
I saw a lot of it on Twitter as the Raptors were getting blown out and swept in game four last night, saying, you know, this can't be Dwayne Casey's fault. It can't be all his fault. You know, this is a 59-win team. You can't blow it up. You can't fire Dwayne Casey. I would be surprised if they fire him, but at the same time, everybody was putting those heavy expectations on this finally being the year that the Raptors got past the Cavs or got past LeBron and made it to the finals. So, you know, who takes that blame? I think DeMar DeRozan deserves a fair amount of that blame.
Thank you.
His numbers were dog shit.
Oh, my God, so awful.
And Serge Ibaka deserves a fair amount of that blame. But there were some questionable coaching decisions that Casey made. So enough to warrant him being fired, that's hard to say.
The crazy thing is we're talking about a candidate for coach of the year being fired on a number one seeded Eastern Conference team in the Toronto Raptors. And that's my thing, man. I mean, you want to call yourself a superstar in this league, DeMar DeRozan? You went minus 60 in the plus minus in the series against Cleveland, and you're a superstar? Get the fuck out of here, man. I already said that. Like, I said that a couple weeks ago. Like, when we were talking about this Raptors team, I'm like, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are all-stars. They are very good players in this league. They're not superstars, though. Kyle Lowry missing defensive assignments late in games, not picking up guys, the inability to knock down shots, DeMar DeRozan being a ghost of himself in this series. Like I said, a minus 60 in the plus minus for the entire series. That's not going to get it done anywhere. So if there's any blame, they should be looking at their players more so than Dwayne Casey. And once again, like, LeBron seems to be that ultimate brick wall in terms of being able to get past the Cleveland Cavaliers for Dwayne Casey. But I would be absolutely shocked if he was out of a job this year.
Yeah, and like you said, how crazy would it be if the guy is widely considered to be if not a front runner, a heavy candidate for coach of the year, and then gets fired in the same season? That's crazy.
That would be nuts. But then again, I do think it like this. Like, you can't fire all 15 players in your team. Sometimes, you know, if you've got guys there, you got to shake things up, and the coaching position is the easiest one to substitute. So sometimes teams look at it that way, other than being able to just completely blow up their entire team of 15 or so players. So we'll see. It'll be very interesting. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, We're going to finish up the show with player evaluations once again. Want to get into Antonio Blakeney and David Nwaba. So stay right here with us and Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. All right, in our final segment, we're going to dive into Antonio Blakeney and David Nwaba. Their season with the Chicago Bulls this year. Matt, I want to start with Antonio Blakeney because I think he's very intriguing. A very young player, was not drafted. The Bulls picked him up, played really well in summer league, gave him that two-way contract, and I even begged, you know, to say that I felt like Antonio Blakeney deserved an NBA contract the way he was playing in the G League and coming up and getting spot starts or getting spot rotation minutes when the Bulls needed it from some of their players when guys like Chris Dunn went down. Cameron Payne was still not back. So he was getting spot starts, especially early spot rotation minutes. So obviously they've got him coming back on the two-way contract. If no other team offers him a full guaranteed contract in the NBA this summer, do you see it at all possible that Antonio Blakeney ends up getting an NBA contract from some team here, or do you hope that maybe he can come back on that two-way contract? And I guess one other question too, do you feel like maybe the Bulls would give him some type of low-tier NBA contract to keep him on the roster full-time, or do you think he's still got some development in his game and we've got to see what happens here?
I think it would be surprising to me if the Bulls signed Blakeney to a real NBA contract this offseason as opposed to just keeping him on the second year of the two-way contract, because we've talked about this before too. Assuming they re-sign Zach LaVine, assuming they re-sign David Nwaba, who we can talk about in a minute, and adding not one but two draft picks that they'll be taking in the first round, all of a sudden your roster's at 14. And I think the Bulls in recent years have shown that they do like to leave one roster spot open so they can accommodate, say, Omer Asik and the Nico trade this past season. Or if they see a guy on waivers that they like they did with David Nwaba last year, they can scoop that guy up. So I think keeping Blakeney on the two-way deal is more realistic. And let's be honest, he is a young talent, 21 years old, has certainly shown his flashes of athleticism and his scoring ability at the G League level. This dude led the G League in scoring at 32 points per game, and his numbers were good shooting wise. He shot near 46% from the field and 35% from downtown. But in the 19 games that he was brought up to play for the Bulls, it's not just that he scored fewer points because he was getting fewer minutes, but when he was on the floor, His shooting numbers dropped dramatically, 37.1 from the field overall and 28.8% from downtown. So clearly something didn't translate. And maybe it was just Blakeney not really feeling quite at ease and in the same rhythm because he was not the guy on a G League team, but just a rotational piece off the bench. And it's hard to get your offensive groove going when that's the case. But to me, there's still a gap. He might be one of the best scorers at the G League level, but I don't think he is deserving of a brand new contract from the Bulls this offseason. I think you keep him as a two-way guy. It's not like they would need him for more than the 45 games that are allotted to those two-way contract players. And you know, you hope to see more growth in his game. And then you go from there, and then if what he does show next season at the NBA level is encouraging, and the Bulls, based on who they have around and who is gone, assuming Justin Holiday goes away and the Bulls have, you know, another spot there playing behind LaVine at the two, then yeah, maybe offer Blakeney a modest, you know, veteran contract. But right now, I don't see it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you too. And I'm crossing my fingers that no other NBA team out there, especially like a tanking team, decides to look at this guy and say, you know what, if we can give him a low-level contract for maybe 2 years, stick him out there and see what he can do. Like you said, he's a scorer, and I think that's the one thing you brought up in terms of I want to see him take that next step. And while this was kind of a small step, his first action in the NBA came on November 15th. He played in 10 games for the Bulls, being up. He scored in double figures three times, but then was sent down. He was inactive. He went back to the G League for almost 3 months, came back up with the Bulls in early March, and actually posted 4 games in which he scored in double figures. Obviously, some of these shooting numbers didn't look so well. He had nights where he was 4 for 14, 4 for 12, 2 for 8, 3 for 9. So I think I'm with you, too. I think
And that, you know, it's unfortunate that he had his season cut short with that fractured wrist, because you wonder what he could have done if he actually was finishing out the season, getting significant minutes. You know, maybe he would have put something together that was even more impressive. But hopefully he can get that injury fixed up this offseason and continue to work.
Absolutely.
On his game.
So I think it's going to be an interesting play for Antonio Blakeney. I think the best situation for both guys, obviously, if Antonio Blakeney gets a contract in the NBA, that would be great for him and really cool. But for me as a Bulls fan, I'd rather see him come back on this two-way contract again next season. And also, I'd like to see the Bulls not waste his days with the NBA team. You know what I mean? Like, when you're on that two-way contract, you only get 40 days with the NBA team, and then the rest has to 45 games with the team, and the rest of the time has to be spent in the G League. So I felt like the Bulls at times just kind of brought him up and let him sit on the bench just because they needed a filler, and at times they kept Ryan Arcidiacono on the roster rather than bringing Antonio Blakeney up. I think that was more so because they had wasted a lot of days for him early on in the season. But that would be pretty cool. Let's see if he can get brought back on that two-way contract again and develop and take that next step again next year, because I mean, he can be a project. Like you said, he's only 21 years old, and I think he's got the ability to score, but we'll see if he can be consistent in the NBA and take what he did in the G League and sort of take that next step towards the NBA. But yeah, I would love to see him back again for another year on that two-way contract with the Bulls.
I think that makes the most sense. All right, let's talk about David Nwaba Jordan. I don't know about you, but I think outside of, you know, Lauri Markkanen being better than advertised as our lottery pick, I would right there behind Lauri put Nwaba as the second best pleasant surprise of the season. What about you?
I would totally agree. I think not only the story of David Nwaba, talking about how he got into the league, having to pay, what, $150 G League entry just to try out for a team, I think is crazy. The story of him and coming from the Lakers. And I know, like, when he signed on, when the Bulls picked him up last summer, we even had a lot of Lakers fans tell us, like, man, I really wish the Lakers wouldn't have gave up on this guy. I just think he was clogged. They thought very highly of him. So I was very shocked, very surprised. He's the Energizer Bunny that I think a lot of Bulls fans were surprised by this year. A guy that wasn't scared to take on the task of guarding anybody in this league. And we talked about it yesterday. And, you know, you stack up some of these Bulls players on this team, and the one common theme is none of them can play defense. And I think David Nwaba is that exception. And I'd like to see him take another step to next year, improve on his defense, but also take the ability to drive to the basket and score, which a lot of times when he was scoring major buckets for the Bulls, he was taking it to the rack, trying to get fouled, and sort of in the same sense that we want to see Chris Dunn do that. So I love Blakeney, and I would say the Bulls are probably going to do everything they can to keep him around. I feel like teams are going to be interested, but they're not going to throw a whole ton of money at him. If it gets outrageous, which I don't think it will, it'll be interesting to see what the Bulls decide to do. But I would be hard pressed to say that the Bulls would let this guy walk to another team, especially the season and the come up that David Nwaba had with this Bulls team this year. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement here. David Nwaba is a great NBA player. He's not supremely talented in any one facet of the game, but he does all the little things. He makes the hustle plays. He does the hard work. He runs the floor really well offensively. And as you mentioned, he's very versatile on the defensive end, and just behind Chris Dunn had the second best defensive numbers on this Bulls roster, which, as you highlighted, you know, not hard to be one of the better defensive rated players on this Bulls team this past season. But he, along with Dunn, looks like probably the only two people on this team that could play, honestly, goodness, defense, especially out there around the perimeter, guarding different guys. So you love his defense, and the element of his offensive game that's missing, obviously, is the three-point shooting. But for a guy who got looks around the rim and has a decent amount at the mid-range game, Nwaba's 47.8 field goal percentage overall was actually the best by a non-center on the Bulls roster this season. It was Lopez and Felicio. And then after them, Nwaba had the best field goal percentage on this Bulls roster. And he only took 0.7 3-point attempts per game, and he made them at a 34.6% clip. So not a great 3-point percentage, but he obviously knows that that's not really his element. That's not where he's supposed to be looking to score. So my hope is that he can try to develop that 3-point shot and his range in this offseason. And absolutely, I hope the Bulls try to re-sign him. You're right when I Nwaba might see some interest this offseason because, I mean, teams and their scouting programs can see that, like, this guy can play. But given the way that the cap situation is this season, coming into the summer, not a whole lot of teams have a lot of money to spend. I agree with you. I would be surprised to see Nwaba get a big offer that the Bulls weren't able and willing to match. And I hope that they can keep him in Chicago on a 2 or 3 year deal that is modest as far as what he's earning. And he can still feel wanted, want to commit to this rebuild and work on his 3-point game this offseason. Because if he can turn himself into a legit 3-point shooter, you're talking about, you know, instantly one of the better two-way players on this roster.
Yeah, something cool from NBA Math about David Nwaba. So shout out to people at NBAMath.com because they have come up with this thing called total points added and defensive points stopped and also offensive points added for guys. Something that shocked me here is David Nwaba had the sixth most minutes played by a Bulls player this season. He was only one of two players to be a positive defensive point stopped on the Bulls this season. Bobby Portis being one of them at 40.18, and then David Nwaba at 30.32. Everybody else was negative by a mile. So I guess the only thing that concerns me, and really this isn't really that big of a concern considering the guys that are on the team that I would rather have shoot the ball. He was the second worst in offensive points added this season for the Bulls at a negative 82.63. So I'm not concerned about his offensive game. If he can be a defensive stopper and, like you said, sort of convert himself, I know he's a shorter shooting guard, two player, and he can play the three at sometimes when you're kind of going small ball. He's 6'4", but if he can keep that defense up and find a way to, like you said, maybe be a 35% or above 3-point shooter and be a knockdown spot shooter, I mean, that could be huge for the Bulls in terms of, especially in terms of value, what they could get for him this summer on that contract. So between him and his offensive game, which definitely needs some improvement, like I said, but if he can work on that 3-point shot, he's got the defensive skills to guard, like he said, and not be scared to guard anybody in this league. And you think about it, I think back to that Knicks game, the one where Lowry exploded and David Nwaba was going off and he was torching Mike Beasley and he wasn't afraid to take matchups and switches on Kristaps Porzingis, like those little things. And even when they were playing Cleveland a bunch this year, he was not afraid to take on the task of having to guard LeBron. So for me, I want guys on this team that are willing to step up and do that. So I think that was pretty cool from his side of the game. That would be the only downside to David Nwaba's game is that he's not all that great of an offensive player, but I don't think you really need that with the number six pick coming in. You've got Lowry, who you want to take majority of the shots. You've got a Bobby Portis, who's an offensive type of player. And then you've got Zach LaVine, who's supposed to be your knockdown scorer. So hopefully he can help manage some of the defensive weaknesses of Zach LaVine going forward next year, but I'd love to see him come back. I think he's been just an absolutely phenomenal story for the Bulls and for the front office, who, you know, as much shit as they get for giving up on players, letting guys walk, talking about like Spencer Dinwiddie.
I mean, deciding to pick Nwaba up off those waivers once the Lakers let him go, that was a
huge move.
Probably one of their best moves this season, which, you know, not a hard test before people start, you know, coming at us, oh, Garpax apologists. No. But you can make fun of this front office when they do stupid things. When they do things correctly, like seeing the potential of a David Nwaba, you got to give him credit.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they're complete dumbasses for selling the second pick to, or the second round pick to the Golden State Warriors for cash. Like, yeah, they're total dumbasses for doing that. They talked about leaving quote unquote a roster space open, and I don't give them credit for saying, oh yeah, you know, this was our plan all along to keep that roster space open so we could pick up a guy like David Nwaba. Get the hell out of here. I like that they evaluated him and wanted him either way, but don't shove that bullshit down my throat. Like, you sold the second round pick so you could keep your options open in terms of roster space. Come on, man. So yeah, I agree, though. I give them credit for evaluating David Nwaba, bringing him in on a really, really cheap deal and letting him develop and flourish. And they caught a good guy.
They did. And now the question becomes, what exactly will that figure be, assuming that they are true to their word and do want to bring him back? If, you know, unless it is a, all right, well, Nwaba brings this offer sheet from another team and the Bulls decide yes or no to match it. If that doesn't happen and the Bulls kind of can dictate with that negotiation how many years, how many dollars, somewhere in the range of, you know, like I said, maybe a 2 or 3 year deal where he's making, I'm going to throw out somewhere between 5 and 10 mil per. I mean, just think about it this way. Who would you rather have earning $8 million next season? David Nwaba or Cristiano Felicio? Because I absolutely believe that David Nwaba is worth $8 million for a season salary, more so than Felicio at this moment in time.
I'm with you. And I was going to say, I think that's exactly the ballpark. And I'm glad you said 5 to 10 million. I would say, like, even if the Bulls had to give him a three-year deal at $12 million, that's $4 million per, I'm okay with that. I mean, you look at what Sean Kilpatrick is making on his three-year deal. His three-year, $3.3 million, I think, over the next 2 years, or $2.5 million, somewhere in that ballpark. But I would say David Nwaba is at least worth that. So I think that's another interesting component to see whether or not they bring him back, which we talked about yesterday. But yeah, I would say, you know, if the Bulls can bring him on in a two-year, $7 to $10 million a year, or 3 years, $12 million, I'm down. And I think they've got everything in their court in terms of being able to negotiate. David Nwaba, I feel like, would be that type of player, too, to say, you know what, this team took a chance on me. They let me thrive. They let me develop my game. I want to stay here with some of these young guys. Maybe then decide to go to another team where maybe he'll be in and out of a rotation, not really get the minutes to be able to develop as a player. So I feel good about David Nwaba coming back to the Bulls this summer.
And it should be mentioned that there is also that he's got a qualifying offer. The Bulls have a qualifying offer for Nwaba of $1.7 million. So I think if they really want to bring him back, it's more likely that they'll come to terms on a deal that's at least 2 years long as opposed to that qualifying offer, because I think they know that he's worth more than that. So just to let people know that there is also that option on the table, though I think the Bulls and Nwaba sit down and work something else out.
Totally, totally agree. I'm excited to see what he looks like next year, especially another year in the weight room, having some chemistry with some of these young guys, another year where really he can take another step. So like we said, maybe his offensive game will take another step.
Shoot a bunch of threes, Nwaba. Shoot a bunch of threes this offseason.
I'm with you. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Quick note about Dash Radio real quick. Anybody out there that listens to this show, if you just recently bought a GM car, so anything from General Motors, Dash Radio is automatically installed into your console, so you can listen to us for free in your car while you're driving, wherever you're commuting from. So if you do own a General Motors car, over the last 2 years, Dash Radio is installed there, so you can listen to us on the Nothing But Net channel while you're driving to work, maybe you're doing some grocery shopping, whatever the case may be. Flip on Dash Radio on the Nothing But Net channel. We're there 3 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We'll do mailbag tomorrow, so send all of your texts and voicemails to us there. You can tweet us as well. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Dunleavy looking, finds Rose. Rose trying to get open, fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer!
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.